Ave Maria in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the Church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for joining us on this hour of Ave Maria in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. This hour, we're going to be joined firstly by my friend, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, the Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News, to talk about church news and current events in light of church teaching. We're going to try to cover as much as possible today because we've got quite a lot of important news pertaining to Christian life and the life of the church. One of the things that's going to come to the fore is that Pope Leo XIV he greeted Cardinal Victor Manuel Fernandez, and then he issued an urgent offering for the DDF, the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith, to provide clear doctrinal guidance pertaining to what he calls new challenges, especially in a context that's being marked by global declining religious belief. He emphasized that the Dicastery of the Doctrine of the Faith carries out a very precious service to the Church, and that their goal, for the very reason for the Dicastery's existence, is the promoting and safeguarding of the integrity of Catholic doctrine in matters of faith and morals across the board, across the world. And therefore, the mission that's been entrusted to them really revolves around offering clarifications on the doctrine of the Church. Pastoral and theological guidance, to be sure. And while we can acknowledge complexity and delicateness in particular application situations, Pope Leo XIV is effectively saying that the work of the Dicastery is to provide concrete clarity. And so we will continue to hope for continued clarity coming out of the DDF. One of the other pieces of news will be about Venezuela. Alejandro Peña Ecluza, he's a former political prisoner that's been exiled in Italy. He effectively shares how what's happening in Venezuela really is the result of a culture that is post-Christian. It was Christian, it forgot Christ, and tyranny filled the power gap. I've said this time and time again on this program. We need to bring Christ and his church back into the public sphere if the West is to continue in its structures for human flourishing. Finally, we speak with my friend Michael Pakulik. In The American Republic, the American writer Orestes Brownson reflected on the meaning of loyalty. We're going to try to unpack what loyalty means within an American framework and a Catholic framework. All this after the headlines.
Thanks, Marcus. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Thursday, January 29th. It's the Feast of St. Juniper. Today's news brought to you by the Ave Maria Family of Funds at AveMariaFunds.com. Minneapolis Democratic Mayor Jacob Frey is in Washington, D.C., pushing for an end to what he calls unlawful ICE operations in his city.
It is less safe when we have roving bands of agents marching down the street just looking for somebody who might be concerned. And I got to tell you, everybody is concerned when you have that kind of occupation.
Frey was speaking at the U.S. Conference of Mayors winter meeting. On Thursday, Border Czar Tom Holman spoke with reporters in Minneapolis after being deployed to oversee immigration operations there. Holman says he's working on plans for eventual drawdown of federal authorities in Minnesota. Senate Democrats, along with a handful of Republicans, have blocked a spending package that would avoid a government shutdown. Democrats are calling for changes to ICE policies after Alex Preddy was killed in Minneapolis last weekend, and they want Homeland Security funding to be separated. It comes after reports saying President Trump and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer are close to a deal to avoid that shutdown. President Trump will announce a new initiative to fight drug addiction soon. CBS News reports that he'll sign an executive order to coordinate a federal response to drug addiction and substance abuse. It will create a, quote, White House Great American Recovery Initiative that will be chaired by Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Katherine Burgum. The life expectancy of a person living in the U.S. is hitting an all-time high. According to a report released Thursday by the CDC, life expectancy was 79 years old in 2024, marking a half-year increase. Female life expectancy has increased to 81.4 years, compared to just 76.5 for men. From your AveMariaRadio.net news desk, I'm Steve Clark.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. Joining me as he does every week so generously is my friend Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News. We're talking about church news and current events in light of church teaching. Matthew, thank you very much for making the time. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing very well, like everyone else. Some are enjoying the cold. I love winter, but I know this has been a very difficult time for a lot of people in many, many places. So our prayers that everyone has remained safe.
So let's begin then with talking about some warmer news, or at least heartwarming news. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the memories of Cardinal Arinze and the priest who could become Nigeria's first saint.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're talking about Blessed Cyprian Michael Iwene Tansi, who died in 1964. And we always talk about the impact of the lives of saints or would-be saints, blesseds, beatas, that sort of thing. And one of the big requirements for any cause of canonization, obviously, we have the demonstration of holiness, heroic virtue, but one important aspect that's often overlooked is the spiritual legacy of the candidate in question. Did they leave behind a very significant legacy of faith? And here we have a magnificent testimony from one of the great cardinals, one of the great leaders in the church over these years, that's Cardinal Francis Arinze, who's now 93 years old, talking about the impact that this blessed Cyprian had on his life. And of course, here we are with having him beatified in 1998 by Pope St. John Paul II. We need this extra miracle, but here we are listening to the testimony of somebody who was directly impacted. The mark of holiness on the life of Francis Arinze tells us the legacy of this remarkable priest.
And the fact that Francis Arinze speaks so highly of him is a testimony to that mark of holiness.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. As Arinze, in an interview with EWTN News, he said, he was the first priest I knew. In other words, he brought me into the church. Mm. Baptism, First Communion. I was his Mass server in 1945. My First Communion was at his hands. And then he said he prepared me for confirmation. So we've all been impacted in our lives by people that we personally found to be deeply holy. Many of us have had our spiritual lives profoundly shaped. And here we have, in Cardinal Arinze's memory, this one parish priest who led this exemplary life, this life of heroic virtue, touching his life. He went on then to become, Cardinal Arinze, after this First Communion as an altar boy, a cardinal, and who was considered to be, had the circumstances been right, he might very well have been the first modern African to be elected to the papacy. Now, the conclaves didn't line up, that sort of thing. God had other plans. But here's that testament of the legacy of faith.
That legacy of faith is going to stand to be such a testimony to everything Nigeria is going through right now. So can we please speak to that as kind of a final point on this story?
Yeah, well, that's right. So we have in Nigeria a country that is suffering so immensely from sectarian violence, religious persecution. Christians are under attack in so many different parts of the country. And to have a figure like Blessed Cyprian reminds us of the enduring aspects of the faith. And there's an important point that Cardinal Arinze makes, that this one priest who traveled by bicycle to proclaim the gospel in his part of Nigeria, he said he was a parish priest who single-handedly served 40 different parishes. He said he had a push bicycle and a motorcycle, he said, which functioned sometimes. If we look at the legacy just of that service, 200 priests, as Arinze points out, have arisen from those areas, 3 or 4 bishops, 1 cardinal himself, religious sisters, more than 200 seminarians, and we probably can't even begin to calculate how many people were baptized, received the sacraments, received confirmation, received the Eucharist, received the sacrament of penance. Their lives were changed, they were saved because of this one man. And it's a model then for the suffering of the thousands and thousands of Nigerians who, as you and I are talking right here in the safety of our homes, in the safety of studios, every day for them is a risk. Every day their lives are under threat precisely because they profess Jesus Christ as their Lord.
To switch gears, like you're mentioning about the threat, to switch gears then into another nation that you and I have spoken about that's undergoing quite a lot of threat. Just very briefly, Iran and the government's violent crackdowns and the strained diplomatic relationship that it has caused with the Vatican.
Yeah, I think this is a somewhat underreported or sort of underappreciated story. Mm-hmm. And what I'm talking about is that the crackdown in Iran by the Islamist regime has obviously been straining diplomatic relations with a lot of different countries. The Holy See is one of them. Now, it's a surprise to a lot of people that the Holy See actually has these sort of formal diplomatic relations with Iran. In fact, the Holy See has diplomatic relations with hundreds of countries around the world. And that's very important mm-hmm. because the Holy See has so much to contribute to any of these discussions, in particular on the defense of the dignity of the human person and religious freedom. And the Holy Father, then Pope Francis, appointed most recently, but back in December of 2024, a Belgian missionary, his name is Dominique Joseph Mathieu, the Archbishop of Tehran, Isfahan, mm-hmm. as one of his last cardinals. Why is that notable? Because it positioned him to be a point person, so to speak, in representing the interests of the Holy See. And when we say the interests of the Holy See, we're actually talking about not just the ending of the many restrictions on Christians in Iran, but also on the defense of the human person, of human rights, of the dignity of those rights. And here we are now with the regime in Tehran under threat from its own people who are tired of the radical Islamic regime. We have reports of perhaps tens of thousands of killed and wounded and arrested and imprisoned and executed Iranians across the country. So the Holy See then is looking at this with obvious grave concern, especially because the Holy See wants to defend those rights, but also in working with Iran to bring a stable and lasting peace to the region. It's one reason why, despite many criticisms from various quarters, Pope Francis was so determined in reaching out to Muslim countries as he did in promoting what he called fraternity, that these are stepping stones, that this is common ground that we can talk about. And I think that paid off. But now there are challenges to fraternity. There are challenges to lasting peace in the region precisely because of the impulse on the part of the Iranian people for freedom, for democracy.
As a final consideration for this segment, can you also touch on Cardinal Parolin's very strong statement about what's going on in Iran?
Yeah, Cardinal Parolin, who always has to maintain great care diplomatically, mm-hmm. Has expressed his concerns that about any government that would be murdering its own people. In other words, that we have to be clear in the defense of the human person, the rights of citizens in their own country. So Cardinal Parolin, as he puts it, how is it possible to attack one's own people to the point of causing so many deaths? Now that at first blush might look, okay, that's somewhat vague. That's actually in terms of diplomatic speak, pretty remarkable because he's making a point to the Iranian regime that it does not have a right to massacre its own people in order just to try to cling to power.
My guest is Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News. He is walking with us through church news and current events in light of church teaching. Right now, we are finishing off with a discussion on what's happening in Iran and how that's affecting diplomatic relations with the Vatican. Continuing on the other side of the break, stay tuned. I'm Marcus Pisa.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
In her diary, St. Faustina wrote, "If only I had a spiritual director from the beginning, I would not have wasted so many of God's graces." If even the saints needed spiritual guidance, how much more do we? The nonprofit Revive app lets you meet virtually with certified spiritual companions, scheduling sessions at your convenience, helping you grow closer to Christ. Your first two sessions are free. Download the Revive app today. That's R-E-V-I-V, and then the number 3.
This program is brought to you in part by the following nonprofit, Christendom College.
Each summer, hundreds of high school juniors come to Christendom College for the best week ever. A week-long experience of classes in philosophy, literature, history, and theology, daily mass and adoration, activities like canoeing, debating, dancing, and bonfires in Virginia's Shenandoah Valley. Students leave with a deeper appreciation for the liberal arts and lasting friendships that stay with them long after the weekend ends. Learn more at thebestweekever.com.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria, Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at avemaria.com. That's avemaria.com.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Speed. I'm talking with my friend Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News. Matthew, I want to pick up with a new piece of news, and that has to do with the report that EWTN News put out about the large majority of religious institutions in the U.S. reporting that no one had professed perpetual vows in 2025. This is heartbreaking, to say the least.
Yes, it is. And it's a demonstration in many ways of the problems that we have in culture today, the challenges that we have in fostering vocations to the religious life, to the priesthood, but in particular to the religious life. It's a statement, too, of the failure of us to ask those questions as Catholics. I look at all of us in many ways are responsible for not asking questions of the people in our lives. Are you interested in the religious life? Is this something you have thought about? You know, I go back to that statistic from years back that the vast majority of young men, about 80-some percent, had at one point considered a vocation of the priesthood, but no one had asked.
Mm.
I mean, that's kind of an indictment. In light of all of that, I would also point to a piece at EWTN News and English Language Service that was originally in Assi Prensa, and that is on Sister Marta, who has just received her first 100,000 followers. So when you achieve that, it's an immense achievement, you get a YouTube plaque. And she is in Sahagun, Spain, at the Holy Cross Benedictine Convent. And she's well surpassed, obviously, that 100,000. But she also has about 173,000 followers on Instagram, 193,000 on TikTok. I mention her because she has an important take on the call to the religious life. And as she puts it, parents most opposed to religious vocation are not the most atheistic ones. In other words, what is the environment that's being created for young people to hear that call, if there is one, and how to discern that call?
I'm saddened. I'm really saddened by that. I really am, because the heartbreak of it, like you mentioned, the indictment, simply shows that even within the church community, we seem to have lost the evangelical zeal for aiding our young in pursuing God's vocation for their lives.
Right. And yet, we do have these beautiful stories, these incredible stories of these communities that are growing, that are healthy, happy. You can see them. We just had the March for Life, and I think, for example, the Sisters of Life. I think of a variety of other communities, congregations that attended in full force at the March for Life. And they are out there every day, and they're the ones who are bringing in these vocations. So there is hope here. It's always possible to just throw our hands up in despair, and that would be a great mistake, because I think we see those vocations, and I think it's important for us to do everything we can to support those communities who are drawing in those young men and those young women into the life of the religious.
As a just to pivot a little, simply because they're important things that I really want to invite your thoughts on, I want to ask you to speak to Pope Leo XIV's urging of the Dicastery of the Doctrine of Faith. He's asked for some clear guidance on present moral challenges.
Yeah, this is one of the most interesting stories of the day, in my view, because Pope Leo XIV met over today with the leadership of the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith. And in other words, that is the dicastery that used to be the Congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith. It is very famously headed by Cardinal Victor Manuel Fernandez. And his words, I think, are important because he says something here that is absolutely true, but is also absolutely consistent with the purpose of this dicastery. You know, people have lost in some ways a focus or an understanding of what the Holy Office, as it used to be called, is tasked to do. As the Holy Father said, that the mission entrusted to them is offering clarifications on the doctrine of the Church, but on those issues that are pastoral, they're theological, on issues that are complex and delicate. But he talked about offering clarity, and that this is a precious service, that their job is to promote and to safeguard the integrity of Catholic doctrine in matters of faith and morals. Now, all of that is a way of saying that there is a, I don't want to use the term negative versus positive, but there is the safeguarding aspect of defending the purity and integrity of Catholic teaching. But then there's also the very positive external aspect to it too, and that is promoting authentic Catholic teaching in matters of faith and morals. And that's where I think one of the things that Pope Leo is trying to point out is that we have to be very vocal in helping a very confused world to understand what the Church offers and what the Church actually teaches. And he noted a number of documents that had come out in recent years. I think the Declaration in particular of Dignitas Infinita, mm-hmm. That focused on human dignity, Antiqua et Nova, that looked at artificial intelligence. So these are modern challenges that we're facing. But the perennial teachings of the Church are ever new, ever valid, and ever applicable to these situations. And I think that's one of the big roles that he sees for the DDF, as it's called, going forward.
To switch gears as a final question then about Venezuela, which you and I have talked about in the past, Alejandro Pena Ecluza, he spoke about how what we're seeing in Venezuela really is the result of a tyranny because of a post-Christian culture. Please speak to that as a warning for us today.
Yeah, that's right. So he is a voice, somebody who was exiled, who had to flee his country. We have seen in recent decades, first with the regime of Hugo Chavez, who was managed to get himself installed as head of Venezuela on the empty evil promises of socialism, and then to impose this dictatorial, ideologically based regime that laid waste to the health, spiritual, economic, and political and cultural of the country. And here we have a voice, as you say, Alejandro Pena Ecluza, who's a former presidential candidate and a Catholic intellectual who was imprisoned without a trial under Hugo Chavez before being actually exiled. So he knows of what he's talking about. And the point he makes is that democracy, that the question is not whether a dictatorship has fallen, but now how a nation that was brutalized by decades of socialism, Marxism, corruption, and violence can actually pivot to a general, an authentic moral and political renewal. And I think it's a very difficult question, A, because there's so much of the Maduro regime still in power there, but then also what follows when you have a regime slowly unraveling before our eyes. This brings us back even to Iran, to the question of what will follow should the Iranian regime ultimately fall. In much the same way now, the question that he's asking is, what is going to happen in a place like Venezuela, where you do need to have a credible Catholic voice in recrafting culture and the entire ethos of political life?
That entire ethos can be reclaimed. The seeds of the Christian faith, the Judeo-Christian worldview, natural law, they all exist in these places where Christianity once reigned. Matthew, we're out of time. I'm glad we covered that much, but thank you so much for your wisdom.
Yeah, great to be with you, and everyone stay warm.
Thank you, absolutely. My guest has been Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News. He's been walking us through a lot of key events in church news this week, and the last thing he was just talking about is what is happening in Venezuela. Alejandro Peña Ecluza, who is an exiled Venezuelan, simply warned that what's happening there is tyranny that is the result of a post-Christian culture. We need to guard whatever shreds and dregs and, frankly, seeds of Christianity exist in the West, lest we completely become post-Christian. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school. Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law, unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Support for this Ave Maria Radio program comes in part by the non-for-profit St. Anthony Services. Are you shopping for mortgage products, Catholic investing, Catholic health, real estate, or estate planning? StAnthonyServices.org can help you find a Catholic professional for these needs. They regularly connect faithful citizens with faith-based professionals that share our Christian values. More information at StAnthonyServices.org or 877-LIFE-US1.
Pope Francis said, "The key that opens the door to faith is prayer." Join St. Paul Street Evangelization by running a prayer station in the public square. You don't need to be a professional apologist or theologian. Just listen to the needs of the people you encounter. Offer encouragement, take prayer requests, and pray with people. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Hello friends, Deacon Harold Burke-Sivers here, and I haven't been this excited about an up-and-coming speaker for a long time, Dr. Marcus Peter. Dr. Peter has the gift of combining deep theological insight, wisdom, and knowledge with personal testimony and story in a way that makes the power of the church's teaching and God's love felt deeply in the heart of all who hear him. If you are looking for someone for your next conference, parish mission, or event, look no further than Dr. Marcus Peter.
Visit MarcusBPeter.com to book Dr. Marcus Peter to speak at your event. At the Ave Maria website, you can continue the discussion and education through the Ave Maria Radio's links to social media. Ave Maria Radio has accounts on Facebook, X, TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and find the social media symbols at the top of your screen.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
He was a Jesuit, a cardinal, and a doctor of the Church.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Robert Bellarmine is honored for his immense contributions to theology, including helping to draft two important catechisms that defended church teachings during the Protestant Revolt. Pope Clement VIII named Bellarmine a cardinal because, as the Pope put it, Bellarmine had not his equal for learning.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. In The American Republic, the American writer Orestes Brownson reflected on the meaning of loyalty. He declares that loyalty is the highest, noblest, and most generous of human virtues. It is the human element of that sublime love or charity which the inspired apostle tells us is the fulfillment of the law. Michael Pakulich joins us to unpack that. Michael is an Aristotelian scholar, ordinarius of the Pontifical Academy of St. Thomas Aquinas, and is professor of political economy in the Bush School of Business at the Catholic University of America. Michael, it's so great to speak with you again. How are you?
Hey, Marcus.
I'm really glad you're with us. And before we go any further, I'd like to ask you to just introduce Orestes Brownson and his amazing heritage to all of our listeners.
Orestes Brownson, one of the ways I like to come at him is by telling people that John Henry Newman wanted to recruit him as one of the founding professors at his new university in Dublin. Mm-hmm. He was a well-known convert. He wrote an autobiography called The Convert to the Catholic Faith. And he had gone through the whole gamut, just about every religious position that was available in the United States at the time. Remarkable man who was basically self-taught. He memorized the Bible by the time he was 12 years old, like Lincoln in his education. Just maybe the top journalist. He founded his own review. He wrote lots and lots of essays, which are so well argued that they really just make look juvenile, the things that you see on the internet today. He wrote these things, you know, one a day, essentially. It's just a remarkable, energetic mind. So he became a Catholic and great defender of the Catholic faith. And then he, after the Civil War, he's very troubled by the war, and he thought a mistaken political philosophy, which was in some sense the basis for it. And so he said, you know, I was too old to serve on the battlefield. Here's my service. I'll write this book called The American Republic. And I'm teaching a class on it right now. My students love it because he's a strong character. He's not liberal in any of the bad senses of the word, mm-hmm. although he is liberal in the sense that he thinks that freedom is one of the most important goods that the United States should aim at. He has this idea that each country has its kind of distinct vocation, and the American vocation is to combine the two conceptions of order and law on the one hand and freedom on the other hand. And that's our task by God, to bring those two things together. So they love it. The students love it. To a lot of us, it looks like this is the way forward. So we're going back to this book from 1865, and we're thinking that it's actually showing us the way forward now.
Now, considering everything you just shared about his thought and therefore what he was trying to endow the American people and his readers, I want to invite you to speak about loyalty as a virtue and why one would think that here in the West, especially in the United States, we'd be averse to the concept and the word.
I've been thinking about loyalty a lot in connection with the Trump administration. We don't need to get into political details here, but a lot of commentators say, well, the kind of the guiding ideal in the administration is loyalty. Mm-hmm. So I've been thinking about that and what are the various forms of loyalty. And then it's kind of a, you know, kind of a standard way of thinking about loyalty is it's a personal bond. And it's like a relationship that you have to a king or something like that. And so Brownson, the passage that you read at the beginning of this segment, just kind of leapt out at me because he praises loyalty as a Republican virtue. And more than that, he says it's the highest virtue. He has in mind the common good. I mean, Aristotle says in the beginning of his Nicomachean Ethics, to be able to chart the way to happiness for an individual is a good thing, but for a whole state, it's godlike and divine. And I think he knows that passage. He's echoing it, what you read. And so then it made me think, well, how do you understand loyalty? And what exactly is loyalty? And what is Republican loyalty? And he was writing right after the Civil War, 1865, and you know, what, 400,000 men gave up their lives on the Union side, dying in the war. That's a lot of sacrifice. And obviously the war could not have been won unless you had a lot of men, generous-hearted men, going out in the battlefield, being prepared to die. This is a necessary condition of winning the war. And then, so what's their motive? Well, a lot of them fear, a lot of them money in some cases. But, you know, I think he's just saying it's loyalty to the nation. It's a very, very interesting idea.
It really is. And as interesting as this idea is, he grounds it in the concept of lawfulness and lawlessness. And that's important for us to understand that civil obedience is a natural fruit of loyalty to the Republic. In that sense, it's annexed to a virtuous patriotism.
Yeah, so there's an interesting question of why talk of loyalty has kind of fallen away. I mean, Brownson says, well, people confuse loyalty with royalty, and so the Americans generally have not liked it, and he's aware of that. Loyalty was a huge deal in the 1950s in the United States during the McCarthy era. You know, are you loyal to the United States, or are you disloyal to it because you're siding with the communists? And you know, Robert Oppenheimer was interrogated as regards his loyalty. And you know, maybe as a reaction against that recent political drama, we've now completely backed away from speaking about loyalty. But then, you know, Brownson says loyalty is the correlative of lawfulness and law. And I never really thought about the term, but the moment you do, you see, well, it comes from the French loi, and it's loi auté. It means lawfulness. I mean, literally, the word means lawfulness. And then I found that very interesting, because you at first you think loyalty is a kind of personal fidelity, like responding to your word or your promise to be true to someone's intentions or plans, but now it ends up being lawfulness as a condition of really being loyal. And then I'm thinking to myself, well, where does this come in the Catholic tradition? And like one thing that leaps to mind immediately is St. Thomas More, who thought that King Henry VIII was lawless in the way he broke away from the church and declared himself the sovereign head of the Church of England. And so he couldn't follow him there. He could not carry out his wishes. He could not sign the oath. And so because it would have been lawless to do so. So this bond, this heart, this matter of the heart, always has to be constrained by law. So loyalty always requires lawfulness. So that's why he says when he's about to be executed, I am the king. I'm God's, the king's good servant. But he doesn't say but by the way, everybody misquotes him as but. Mm-hmm. I'm the king's good servant and God's first. So it puts him in order, but it has to do with loyalty and lawfulness.
Each man rightly owes loyalty to the communities of which he is a part. That's directly from the Catechism. And that concept, like you mentioned, you've been touching very beautifully on why it's almost alien here in the United States, but that concept should at least be inherent to the Catholic imagination.
Yeah. Yeah. So if I'm trying to picture it, where it falls in classical thought, because Catholic moral theology is largely the appropriation of the thought of the Greeks and Romans into the gospel. And I think it has to do with this idea of civic friendship. And that's the thing I originally wanted to study as a graduate student. So it's really so interesting. This idea that in being the member of any community whatsoever, but especially political community, there's the heart is involved. It's not simply a matter of following laws or following due procedures or being somebody who's rule-based or something like that. There is a personal element of the heart which comes out in language like motherland or fatherland. I mean, I think we've lost it in the sense that we don't even refer to George Washington as the father of our country. That used to be pretty common. The founding fathers, people strike that. They think that that's sexist language. But how are we going to have affection towards our country or towards the founding, unless it's land where our fathers died?
My guest is Dr. Michael Pakulik. He's an Aristotelian scholar, ordinarius of the Pontifical Academy of St. Thomas Aquinas, and professor at the Bush School of Business at the Catholic University of America. We're talking about Orestes Brownson and the virtue of loyalty. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
You like pizza? Me too. And for that, we can thank our friend Tom Monahan. First, he starts with $900 and opens one pizza shop. Then it's worldwide, thousands of shops. But all this was just a warm-up for his greatest achievement yet. He built a university.
God inspired Tom to build up generations of men and women who have a hunger to reach the world for Christ. This place is Ave Maria University.
Visit avemaria.edu to see what's next.
Steve and Janet Ray here, inviting you to join us in Portugal, Spain, and France as we follow the three children of Fatima and Saint Bernadette of Lourdes and encounter lots of surprises along the way. These moving apparition sites never fail to inspire awe, healing, and a love for Our Lady, exquisite countryside, and our Spanish chaplain, Father Alfonso Aguilar.
To learn more about your Ave Maria Radio trip, find the Ave Maria Radio Travel tab at avemariaradio.net.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Do you feel as though life is flying past you? Are you desperate for a way to find moments of peace and quiet? Lord, teach me to pray. The free Ignatian Prayer Series will open your heart to His voice, to the peace you are seeking and the only love that fulfills the human heart, Jesus. God is calling you to true joy, knowing Jesus personally. Lord, Teach Me to Pray is free. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com, click on the red box, order the Lord, Teach Me to Pray series now. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com.
Whom do we most need in order to say Jesus is Lord? The Holy Spirit. The Catechism says that every time we invoke Jesus, it is the Holy Spirit who draws us onto the path of prayer. And since it is the Holy Spirit who teaches us to pray by recalling Jesus, how can we not pray to the Holy Spirit too? The Church urges us to call on the Holy Spirit continually, especially at the beginning and the close of every important action. And how should we pray to Him? The traditional form is to invoke the Father through Christ our Lord to give us the Consoler, the Spirit. The simplest, most direct invocation is, Come, Holy Spirit, fill the hearts of the faithful, enkindle in them the fire of your love. The Holy Spirit is the artisan of the living tradition of prayer and the master of interior prayer. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
John 6, verses 48 to 58. Jesus says, I am the bread of life. Your fathers ate the manna in the wilderness, and they died. This is the bread, meaning me. This is the bread which comes down from heaven, that a man may eat of it and never die. I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. And the bread which I shall give for the life of the world is my flesh. At which the Jews disputed among themselves, saying, How can this man give us his flesh to eat? They're scandalized by this. How is it that we're not? How is it that we just hear this and go, Oh yeah, I know that passage. They're just outraged and at least perplexed. Sane people, inspired teachers, wise men, prophets don't say things like this.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Pete. I'm talking with my friend Dr. Michael Pakulik of the Catholic University of America, and we are talking about Orestes Brownson and the concept of loyalty. This is pursuant to a piece that Michael has written on the Catholic thing. I'd greatly urge everyone to take a look at it, to read it, and to ponder it. That's the Catholic thing. It's called On Loyalty. Michael, I want to continue that last part of the conversation by touching on the fact that there is really a virtue as it pertains to the Catholic imagination and duty to the nation that we live in, to its sovereign laws, and to its constitutional virtues and merits.
That's right, yeah. And it's a kind of fidelity, and it gets tested. I mean, I think that's included in the concept of fidelity, that it's subject to testing. And that lots of times it's not going to be clear, but we have to hold fast to something that we know is true and will it, even though maybe our emotions and imagination can be going in different directions. I think there's a failure of loyalty in all of this second guessing of the founding, to be honest, if you want to know my opinion about it. Has liberalism failed? You know, we're tracing some kind of Hobbesian egoism all the way back to the founding and loss of confidence. I think that's a failure in loyalty. I think that the preceding generation of Catholics was very clear that our founding was quite excellent and perfectly consistent with the Catholic faith. And so we're being tested. There's certainly a lot of problems in our country right now. And it would be easy to give up, so to speak. But I think that Brownson is right. That would be disloyal.
I love that you brought that up. And I want to invite you to speak a little deeper into it. In the time I've lived in the United States, I've heard some atrocious claims about the founding of the United States, and very clearly from people who have not cracked a history book or become students of the writings of the founders, the Constitution, the founding documents. Now, in the face of all of this, can you speak to it as a moral problem, this attempt at not just an historical revisionism, but a demonization of the brilliant men who have come before us, imperfect though they all might have been?
Yeah, demonization. I mean, that's a step that we take when we want to be able to walk away, right? Mm. So it's bad, so it's not making any claims on us anymore. Nothing we need to do. We might be sit back in our chair in a basement and type some things on the internet or something like that. I mean, clearly, whatever is going on in our country, and it's subject to lots of different crises now, one of the most obvious responses to it would be greater activity and energy of involvement in our neighborhood, in our town, in our city, you know, old-fashioned civic engagement. And it's a lot easier to say that it was lost 200 years ago and there's no point in trying. That's like a classic. It's a classic device for being disloyal.
As a classic device, though, we're seeing it permeate the culture more and more, which is leading me, just based on reading your piece and thinking of Orestes Brownson's writings, it's leading me to realize more and more that virtuous engagement in the public sphere requires a kind of disciplined commitment to continue to form the intellect rightly. Can you please speak to that?
Wow. Yeah, that's a great phrase. I agree with that completely. So in the end, it's the will and the intellect rather than the emotions and the feelings that are in play here. And civics, in the old-fashioned sense, we really need to bring that back. We need to be reading the founding documents, reading about the founders, understanding, for example, how classical they really were. I mean, just look at their architecture, right? So they built buildings that reflected their understanding of what civilization is, and their understanding of civilization came from Greece and Rome. Brownson says something very interesting about that. He thinks it's the vocation of the United States to excel. Israel, Greece, and Rome, combine them together, but then go beyond them. So he views a kind of deposit in the founding of those three cultures. It's just a starting point. And you know, in all the great times of American history, I think people have thought that way. I mean, I think, for example, of the of the scene of classical music, which I love so much. Have you ever watched Leonard Bernstein's children's concerts in Carnegie Hall from the 1950s? I mean, everybody's there dressed in a jacket and tie, and everybody's all dressed up, and Bernstein's talking to everybody, so they want to learn the stuff, and they think they need to know the stuff. So that was the time in that post-war time. Obviously, we don't want to, you know, paint everything with unrealistic colors, but it's a time when people thought, well, we really actually can be better than the golden periods of Greece and Rome, and that's what we should strive for.
And that's exactly right. We can be, we have been, and therefore we can continue to be better. And
exactly. I know. So why not start now? Right. So, I mean, it's a different attitude with people having a lot of kids, I want to say. Like, people having a lot of kids, like myself, are saying, okay, well, why can't we just start now? Like, nothing's washed away. It's a new generation. Like, it's not a tabula rasa that's coming to existence, but it is a fresh start.
Now, into that ether, then, can you also please address the reality that by virtue of being citizens of a nation, whether by birth or willful choice of immigration, you've entered into a moral obligation of a social compact, to borrow that latter phrase from the Founding Fathers.
Yeah.
And that social compact places upon you, and that moral obligation, the impetus of this virtue of loyalty.
Well, you know, it's like that old saying on the top of the temple of Apollo in Delphi, know thyself. And the Greeks didn't understand that to mean know yourself as an individual. They generally thought know yourself as a kind of being. And one kind of being I am is I'm an American. And my grandparents came from Ukraine and Poland, but I'm an American. So if I want to understand myself, I have to understand myself as an American. And that means I've been shaped in a certain way. And there's a history here and there's a distinctive culture. You know, it's going to, you know, the Great American Songbook and Gershwin is going to be part of that culture. And so is jazz. And so is heavy metal, to be honest. And so is, you know, Samuel Barber and classical music. I've got to know these things, and I have to allow myself to be shaped and formed and figure out what that is and really love it, correspond to it, you know, the American West or, you know, the history of the South or what's going on in Florida. We used to study all the states and know the models of the states, and you can't know America without knowing the states. Now it seems to me it's a matter of sports teams and personalities, and it's deeply corrupt. So we have to return to, and Pope John Paul II, he's in my article, he's a great example of exactly this, but relative to Poland. And, you know, so he loved Poland. And when he was elected Pope, he was downcast because he knew he had to leave Poland and live in Rome for the rest of his life. He wanted to live in Poland. He loved Poland. So, you know, he models this loyalty so well for us. Because Christianity is always concretized. It's not abstract. It's always incarnated. I have to be an American Christian. That's what I love about my university. They decided to call it the Catholic University of America. Mm. It's like it's not just some old abstract Catholic university. It has to be American. Mm-hmm. I love that.
And there's a lot to be loved by that. Catholics should take pride in an expression of virtuous patriotism and a celebration of all those things that are grounded in the Judeo-Christian heritage that bring about human flourishing, in the West generally, to be sure, but especially here in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, if you look fairly at the whole history of the world, you'd have to conclude the United States has definitely done well compared with other nations and other times. I mean, this is a fantastic place. It's one of the most fantastic cultures and most interesting cultures in the whole history of the world. And here we are, right in the middle of it, right? What are we going to do? Let's contribute to it. Let's see if we can do something like our forefathers did.
Now, you also highlight a crucial reality. We're not singing the praises of the state as if it were to be elevated above the call of natural law and ultimately divine revelation. So, like you highlight, Thomas More was not being disloyal when he proclaimed himself to be God's servant first. Or Antigone wasn't being disloyal when she sought to bury her brother. So, in all those circumstances, we understand that there is a threshold, and when the soul is formed rightly in conscience, that loyalty can really take a free flourishing.
Yeah, it's really, I thought of a ridiculous idea in connection with this. You know, could you have taken the oath to Hitler if you understood loyalty correctly? Because you understand that oath to include nothing. That's a violation of the natural law or lawfulness. And, you know, I suppose you would end up doing nothing. But, you know, it's a strong constraint on loyalty that you have to abide by the natural law and you have to be lawful.
And that's an undebatable part of the Catholic existence. Now, into that framework, I invite you to also speak about the justice that is involved in adherence of just laws, which is a part of the moral responsibility that's owed in terms of civil obedience to a sovereign nation.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how concrete we want to get, but take, for example, Trump's backing away from the Hyde Amendment, or in his apparent desire to promote an abortion drug as a federal initiative across state boundaries. Now, that's all interesting and so on, but you know, if I were Trump's right-hand man, when he said do something in connection with this, I'd have to say, I'm sorry, I can't. I'm just not going to do it. Right. In other words, his command or expression of wish or order, executive decision, whatever it is, to promote the abortion drug would, to truly loyal person, would fall as if on deaf ears, and just nothing would happen from it.
Michael, my friend,
it wouldn't be loyalty. It wouldn't be loyalty to do it.
Exactly. It would be, in fact, it would be an exercise in disloyalty to do it.
Exactly.
Michael, my friend, I'm always joyous to reconnect with you. Thank you for your time.
A pleasure.
My guest has been Dr. Michael Pakulik, who is a professor at the Bush School of Business at the Catholic University of America. We've been talking about Orestes Brownson and the exercise of Catholic virtuous loyalty in a nation.